Get your films on with the Blurgs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurgs.
When a man with a 45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
All right, welcome to another ASC episode of the Film Blurgs. I'm Brandon Norwood, and I'm joined here by
Jeff Stewart. What is up?
For this ASC episode, we are going to be talking about cinematography, and specifically the love story and how the role of cinematography plays in a love story. I chose In the Mood for Love. Jeff chose Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Jeff, I'll let you go first.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind was lensed by Ellen Kuras. She's been in the game for a while, and I was going through her IMDb. She's like done some bangers. You know, she's worked with Spike Lee a bunch. She's done this. She did Michel Gondry's Be Kind, Rewind. She's definitely has some chops. And rewatching this after a while, you know, because it's been, I would say, like 10 years since I've last seen Eternal Sunshine. It still hits hard, you know. It's still, you know, like emotionally, story-wise, it's still like, ooh, I need a warm blanket and some cocoa and a good cry, you know, after watching this shit. But, you know, specifically looking at the cinematography, it's very documentary style, you know.
Yeah, a lot of handheld work, yeah.
Yeah, the camera's always moving. And it's very, you know, beyond the special effects and everything like that and the whimsy, the camera work is very chaotic. And I loved that because that really does represent that aspect of love, you know.
Right.
Love is messy.
Yes.
Love is, you know, romance. It's crazy. It's hectic. You know, it's a whirlwind. And the camera work really, really is part of the story. You know, and that's, I think that's what a lot of movies in general don't get. There has to be a purpose for the camera to do what it does. And the way a movie is lensed definitely helps tell your story more. You know, like if they had shot this strictly, just very simple blocking, kept the camera on sticks and everything like that, I don't think it would have been as impactful as this sort of like voyeuristic sort of like, okay, we're there with you sort of dynamic.
Like the movie we'll talk about later, this one also uses color to its advantage too. And it plays with colors because most of it is dreary and gray, but the colors do pop when they're in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
specifically,
I mean,
Clementine, I want to talk about the surrealism real quick.
Yeah, let's go for it.
I really like how disorienting and how almost it becomes quite, it's in Michelle's style when it gets surreal, but it feels almost like David Lynch at parts. You know what I mean?
You know what? I was thinking that watching is like Michel Gondry filtered through David Lynch.
Yes.
You know, the surrealism, the chaotic nature of it, like I said before, that's love. You know, it's crazy and it upends you and you don't know what's left or right. You can't even trust your own memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like there's a part where Joel is literally pulled away from Clementine and it's nothing but black except this spotlight on Joel's face and as he's being pulled away. And that is one of the most striking shots of the movie. And it's just, it illustrates like really not only what's going on in the moment, but the character's headspace too.
Right. It's tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You know, it's a visual representation of literal tunnel vision. I mean, I know we're supposed to concentrate on cinematography, but like this movie, it's so well acted. We forget that Jim Carrey actually has acting chops.
This cast is like stacked too from top to bottom because it's not
I've forgotten how many people were in this thing.
Right, because it's Elijah Wood, Kirsten Dunst, Kate Winslet, Tom Wilkinson,
Mark Ruffalo.
Like,
looking like a baby.
And that's the thing is like, every single one of these characters is going through something related to love. And it shows just how messy and how heartbreaking it could be at times.
Yeah. The decision to go handheld, the decision to almost make the memories like film.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, with the film burns and everything like that. Yeah. Film is forever unless you cut it up. But memories are a sort of nebulous sort of thing.
That's a good parallel, Jeff, to film and digital photography.
Yeah.
Film is forever, and digital photography, it's here today, gone tomorrow.
Right. I mean, you can, you know, you got the cloud service and everything like that, but there's something physical. I've gotten back into film photography just because I want to hold something in my hand.
Right. You know, right.
I dug that old, it seemed like it was shot on real film too.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't looked it up, but it felt like an old school documentary. Like, it felt like some PBS shit.
Well, not to get off track, but I went and I saw Licorice Pizza again on Tuesday. And the one thing I do miss about film photography and watching Licorice Pizza again is just the grain and the texture and the romantic look that film has that
it's
digital doesn't. Yeah, yeah.
It feels alive.
Yes.
It feels like it's a living thing.
Yeah, like digital, don't get me wrong, digital photography produces great images and we have pushed the envelope with digital photography, but it just doesn't compare, honestly.
Film has a soul. Yeah, film feels like it has a soul, and that's why I'm glad like the two movies that we're reviewing today were actually shot on film. What's the singing and dancing one that I refuse to watch with Emma Stone?
La La Land?
La La Land, yeah. I mean, that was all digital, right?
Nope, that was shot on film.
That was shot on film?
Okay. That is a great-looking movie. Fantastic movie.
Musicals.
Yo, man, you love some musicals this year. Check it out, bro.
I mean, this has been the year to prove me wrong when it comes to musicals, so maybe I need to start getting back in. Like, maybe I should jump in and just, like, do all the fucking musicals.
All right.
I mean, I got nothing to say about this beyond the fact that the documentary handheld style really works for this aspect of love, that down, dirty, that hurt, that pain, aesthetic and storytelling that they were going for.
Right.
And, you know, comparatively, like if you look through, like we're going to talk about way in the future, we're going to do a deep dive into Moonlight. But Moonlight has that same sort of aesthetic, that handheld sort of like that realness.
And we need to dive that one. We should dive definitely into cinematography because that movie's look is so unique.
Right. Well, I mean, like he was like they were using manual Russian lenses and shit like that. They were doing all Barry was doing some fucking weird shit.
Well, it's like why Dune's so unique, because that was shot digitally. They thought it looked too clean. They transferred it to film and then transferred it back digitally because they said they shot some of it on film and they said film looked too retro. And then the digital image was just too clean. So they wanted the best of both worlds.
And I get that.
Yeah. In the mood for love, for some reason, when I started watching this, I kept thinking this movie was 2.5 hours, and it's really an hour and a half.
Right? Like, I was like, all right, let me sit down. Because we were supposed to do this, you know, last week. It's like, I don't have time, man, to watch this movie again to, like, really give it its just desserts. And then I look at the running time, it's like an hour and 38 minutes. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's because it's so deliberately paced. It seems longer.
Did you know this was a 15-month shoot?
15 months? Why?
15 months. Because War is that crazy. They had to switch DPs halfway through the shoot because it was taking too long.
I was on IMDb, and I was like, there were three cinematographers?
Two. Just two.
No, there's three listed on IMDb. Hold on.
No, they're wrong because I watched the credits, bro.
Maybe, you know, it was one of those things where they left dude off and he went on IMDb and put himself back on. But we have
his normal DP, which is Christopher Doyle.
Christopher Doyle.
And he left halfway through the shoot and was replaced by Mark Lee Ping Bin.
I have Pun Leong Kwan as a second. and then Ping Ben Lee as third.
I read through the history of this movie, and that's right. All I got was like half of it was Christopher Doyle and the other half was Mark.
All right. Well, I mean, do we even know who did what?
No, because it's so seamless, just because you could tell my man's war was a dictator on this movie, and good for him.
Right, right. I mean, this is a deliberate, like, when I say deliberate, I don't mean badly. I just mean, like, I don't mean that in a bad way. As in, like, it is elegant, and it is thoughtful, and there's no fat.
No. And what I love, the choices I love in this movie, to speak on cinematography, because we'll get to the colors, because we could talk all day about the colors in this movie.
Right.
But I want to talk about, like, the composition of this movie, where he made this movie beautiful. And to me, this is one of the greatest films ever made. This film looks beautiful, and it's just shot mostly through doorways and close-ups. And that is amazing.
I was going to mention that. There's very little wide coverage, especially, like, the only wide coverage you get are of the couple.
And at the end.
And at the end.
Right.
Everything else is, like, shot real dirty. Like,
it's a voyeur.
It's voyeuristic. Yeah. It's, doing two shots through a mirror and stuff like that. It's just, like, real tight, almost claustrophobic blocking.
One of the things I think is interesting is that you see the Tony Leung's wife from behind twice. You never see her face. You only see the back of her. And then you never see Maggie Cheung's husband. Like, it's crazy to me you don't see their spouses. And this movie works.
Right. But, well, that's that, because the story is about the main couple. Everyone else is sort of like their significant others. Are sort of just the linchpins that kind of bring them together.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought that was a beautiful choice, never showing their significant others. And if you do, it's like just voiceover or a shot from the back. And like a lot of the shots in this movie are shot from people's backs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, the main characters, they very, like, especially at the beginning of the film, they very rarely share the same frame.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Only when they start crossing each other going to the noodle hut, you know, in that beautiful slow-mo tracking shot.
That's his trademark. War loves slow-mo. And here, the way it's used is probably the best use. One of the best use of slow motion.
I mean, it was good in 2046 too. He used it well in 2046.
Did you notice that was the number for the hotel room?
I did. Yeah. I certainly did.
I was like, "Oh, you planting seeds, huh?"
But yeah, like, this is it. Yeah, I mean, there's except for the end, there's like no wide shots. There's no, you're not even establishing shots. You don't even know where you are.
Yeah. The one thing I love about this movie, it's very romantic. It's very traditional in the way these two people fall in love. It's traditional and not traditional. It's untraditional because they come together because their spouses are sleeping together.
Right.
But it's very traditional because they respect each other.
And it's an actual courtship.
Yeah. And you see them actually becoming friends and then falling in love, and it is so sad to see that they can't consummate this relationship because they're married and they want to do better than what their spouses are doing. This movie's PG, and it's probably one of the sexiest movies without sex or any intimate touching. Like, the most intimacy you get is when they're riding home in the back of the taxi and they're just sleeping on each other.
Right.
There's no hugging. There's no kissing. Like, this is a very sexy movie without the intimacy.
Well, without the physical contact. But, yeah. Like, I mean, that's, you know, sometimes that's sexier.
Yeah.
You know, is that want.
Yes.
You know, like that just deep need. And And sort of like this is, I'm glad you chose this one and I chose the other, you know, Eternal Sunshine, because they're both spectrums of what love can be.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, Sunshine is Spotless Mind is very visceral, very just like animalistic,
mm-hmm.
you know, like passion. And this is that slow burn, that yes. longing, you yes. know, that like I'm building something.
And it builds,
I'm trying to build something.
And it builds to like probably one of the most powerful final moments in a film where you get that payoff from the story that he was told earlier in the film. And right. then to that montage with that music. And it's kind of, it's sad, but at the same time, it's creepy because they have that shot from behind where he's whispering to the wall from far away. And in just out of frame is the Buddhist monk watching him.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's very, very deliberate. It's very like everything was thought out.
Especially the two, I want to talk about the use of the colors red and green. Like, right. I've noticed the beginning of the movie, it alternates between red and green. Like, green, sometimes she'll wear a green dress, sometimes she's in a red dress, and then the colors start to kind of come together once they start coming together, if you've noticed that.
Right, like her outfits would sort of like combine like green with the red string, like with the red ribbon and going through
his
it.
Ties yeah. would be like yeah. green or red. I noticed right. that the office that she worked at was green, had green blinds, the walls were green, and where he worked at it was like red and tan almost. It was like
the way, aren't there apartments even green and red?
Yeah, yeah. And like, I think they said Maggie Cheung wore like over 50 dresses tailor made for her, and they shot her in all the dresses, and not all of them made the final movie because that is that much footage. Like the first cut of this movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes,
really,
which is short considering that they shot all this shit for 15 months. Up until they shot right up until 2 days before it premiered at Cannes, where the Cannes president's like, yo, so we getting this movie or not? Because you got to hurry up, bro.
I mean, I've been there before. I've cut a movie right before I had a premiere. I mean, that's, hey, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Hey, that's Return of the King. They were editing that movie right up until an hour before it premiered.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's indie as fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Peter Jackson got away with a lot with that trilogy. Would you say the end is heartbreaking for you?
Yeah, yeah. I don't like happy love stories. I like depressing, like leave you wanting more and sad love stories. So this is right up my alley.
Oh, so then you should definitely watch La La Land.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I thought it was all singing and dancing and happy white people. But if it's got a sad as fuck ending, I'm about it.
I will say the other thing I noticed for the green is during the slow motion where it starts to rain and you see him mm-hmm. hide in the alleyway and she's hiding at the noodle shop. You right, know right, that, right. that street light they always pass? That's on the corner? Yeah.
The one that's the lantern that's right above those pamphlets that are posted on the wall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's green.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah, man. This and the red shoes, like watching these movies so close back to back, it makes me going forward want to use color more in my movies.
Well man, you know, like you've seen my work, my photography and shit like that. I will throw a color. Like I would throw all the colors in there. That's why I love, even though only God forgives, even though I don't like the story of the movie, or like the, you know, the storyline of the movie, the colors, the neon that's used in that, you know?
I could give Nicholas Wending Refn that is like between the neon demon and Only God Forgives. Both of them are trash movies, but they're beautiful to look at.
Right, right. You know he's colorblind.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, so that's why he uses those, like, I think, I mean, I could be a rumor. I think I read this somewhere. I think he's colorblind. That's why he uses those, like, stark, oversaturated colors in his work. And you could even see it back to where, back in the day when he first came on the scene with the Pusher trilogy.
Yeah, Pusher trilogy is amazing.
Yeah, well, didn't they try to remake that once?
They did.
Yeah, how was that?
I didn't watch it. I don't care. Yeah, speaking of colorblind and color, Christopher Nolan, he's colorblind. That's why everybody was so impressed with Tenet, especially the photography of Tenet, because that heavily relies on the colors of red and blue.
Right, right.
So it's interesting to me he made a movie that revolves around red and blue.
Oh, I had no idea. Colorblind.
Yeah, so... But yeah, man, I don't trust anybody who tells me In the Mood for Love is a bad movie. And honestly, if you came up to me and you said, I don't like it, it's a good movie, but not for me, I'd be like, okay, sure.
Right,
I get
enough.
That.
That's fair. That's
but
fair.
If you come up to me and tell me it's a bad movie, I literally don't want to hear your opinions right. on fucking like, movies again.
Right. It's, you know, you have to be able to separate how you feel about a movie from what they have achieved with the movie.
Right.
Like it's a good movie.
Right.
You may not like it. And I get it. You know, some people like cucumbers better pickled. I don't know. You can't just dismiss it as a bad movie.
Well, that for me, the prime example I would use this is for Gangs of New York. Gangs of New York is a good movie. I don't like it. And people always like, really? And I tell them why. And I sit down and I give the whole explanation why I don't like it, they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I get it. And I was like, yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, I tried rewatching Gangs of New York during the height of the pandemic, or I guess we're in the height of the pandemic. I don't know anymore.
I guess this will have to be another episode where we do a deep dive into Gangs of New York, because I mean, I can sit here and tell you specifically what rubs me the wrong way and what, and it's not the racism. It's just... That movie,
at least race is real. Yeah, at least it's kept real.
I will say this and move on about Gangs of New York. That movie was gestating for 20 years. Like Scorsese was working on that for 20 years. And the fact that it boiled down to a simple 3-hour revenge story, I think you deserve much better, especially with considering the book it's based off of. And the book has so much history and so much text to it. It's just...
Right.
So, yeah, we have to do a deep dive into that.
Yeah, we'll do a deep dive on it because, you know, like, I remember hating it the first time I watched
it. Damn, so we were in the same boat.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, man, Scorsese, Marty. And then I only watched it the once. And then, you know, like, pandemic is like, you know, let me, I'm older now, let me go back and watch it. It's like, I don't hate it. And for what it was okay. I mean, like, if you want to, we'll get on a deep dive, like, we'll dissect it. And, like, I have some problems with it. But what ruined the movie was the fucking hearing Bono's voice singing that song at the transition of old New York to modern day New York. It just fucking killed it for me.
So we're basically.
It literally killed the movie for me.
The song aside, we're basically in the same fucking boat on that movie. Because yeah, I did the same thing as you. I did the same thing as you last year. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's flawed, and I like it better than I originally did. But, you know, like, it's not top tier for me.
Real quick, one of the things I do think that adds to the sexiness of In the Mood for Love is that you have Maggie Cheung and Tony Leung, and those are two of the most beautiful people on earth. And
they're still sexy.
Yeah, like Tony Leung was just, I haven't seen Maggie Cheung. Maggie Cheung even said she stopped working so much because she's like, I'm never gonna top that movie, and what else am I gonna do? Tony Leung's been working consistently, and he made his first American film this year with
yeah. Yeah.
Shang-Chi. And I hope, brother, I hope you come back to America and make another American film, because
we got you, man. Like, yeah. we you come see us.
Yeah, man.
We'll help. We'll make something good for you.
I'll be real with you. Tony Leung, to me, is one of the greatest actors of all time. Like, all the movies I've seen him in, I'm just like, this dude. I mean, he has it. The looks, the charisma, just the chops. Like, he could be a good dude when he needs to be, but then when he needs to be like a villain, he's a scary guy.
Like, he's Asian Cary Grant. If you look at him.
Yeah.
He's Asian Cary Grant.
Yeah, man. His range is so wide, you know? And like here, especially in The Move for Love, he's so young and he's so like handsome. It's just their faces, especially the close up on their faces, right. It's just striking. Like, it grabs you because I'm just not used to seeing pretty people shot like that.
And like, let's talk about the close ups, right? I love how they're not even the close ups are not even dead center. They're always askew. They're right. always like profiled and like just a bit askew. And it's just like, it's sort of unsettling. I don't want like, right. I don't think unsettling is the word.
It's but building it's tension.
Like, right. It's the tension. Yeah.
Yeah. The one shot, I know this is the shot that sticks out in my mind, which is sex without sex. The shot of Maggie Cheung just staring off into space and she's leaning against the doorway. And Tony right. Leung is like leaning on the opposite side of her, just staring at her. And she eventually turns and looks at him and they have that look. And I was just like, yeah, that's the look.
That's like fucking every romance.
Yeah, everybody's had that look between two people where you just look at each other. And
it's like, oh, we doing this? Yeah. Or like, no, like that's the look.
That, and I love it because it's in slow-mo. She walks right past him and he turns around and looks at her and just follows her. And you just know, like, man, if there was going to be a moment, it was that one. You know?
I mean, it's a sexy shot. My favorite, honestly, my favorite shot of the whole entire fucking movie is when Tony Leung's just smoking in his office. That's just like a beautiful, just posed, lit, slow mo shot with the smoke. I'm a smoker, so I mean, I'm a sucker for seeing other smokers, you know, on screen. And it's like, oh goddamn, that's why I smoke. It looks so fucking elegant and sexy.
Man, I watching this again, I'm just like, bro, I'm gonna have to watch this another time just because. You know when you watch a movie where you see next level filmmaking, like Lord, like Fellowship of the Ring, like right, Dune, right. like Moonlight, where you want to sit down and go in frame by frame. Like, that's what I want to do here, is go in frame by frame and just study this.
And the thing is, it's not flashy.
No.
You know, it's I mean, there are quick cuts. I will give you that. Like the cutting
at the beginning,
it's
very frantic.
Right. Yes. But it slows down. I don't think a cinematographer with a modern day sensibility would have been able to keep the camera as still and linger as much as it did here.
I will say, I don't think any director, modern day director, could make this movie. And I don't think this movie could have came from America.
I'm not going to say another director couldn't have done it. We have some people in the wind that, you know, could probably pull this off as well. Yeah, I would definitely agree with you that like an American director doesn't have the sensibilities that it takes.
Man, we could these are the movies we chose to highlight romance. This is this is one of my all-time favorite movies. We could have chose Casablanca, but I mean, that movie's been talked about to death. I mean, Jesus.
Right. Also on the list, we were going to, I was thinking about doing Moonlight.
I was thinking about Citizen Kane, because Citizen Kane is a love story.
Yeah, I mean, depends on, like, what you consider love. Yeah, yeah.
It's not love between two people. It's love between lost innocence.
Yeah, yeah. No, so there's also what you define as love. I also was thinking about maybe Brokeback Mountain.
oh man, I have to revisit that. I haven't seen that since I saw it in theaters. Like, I need to revisit. Ang Lee's underrated, bro.
Oh, I mean, I guess you could even, we could have even done the Ice Storm.
I haven't seen that in a minute.
It's been a minute, right?
I can't even remember if that's a love story or not.
I mean, there's elements of love in it. Like, so it depends on anything can be a love story.
Well, what did I say in my our last episode is like, a lot of the movies that I picked were because they were motivated by love. And that's what, at the end of the day, that's what drives most people to do what they're doing, whether good or bad, you know?
Yeah, Liz, that's love or hate, and hate is just, you know, another, you know, you have to love something so much in order to hate something else. So
there you go. That's our ASC episode on love and cinematography. We will be back with three more.
You can't get rid of us. We're gonna talk all sorts of shit about all sorts of shit.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. Yeah, I guess shout outs to ASC and the crew. Nancy. If you like us, do all the things that you do when you like something on the internet.
Rate and review us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And please, please follow us on Twitter, because we will be doing some commentaries. We're going to be doing some giveaways.
I can't wait to do a drunk live commentary on Twitter.
You got to pay for the shipping, though, for the giveaways, though, because we're not rich.
Not yet.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that. Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. We're going to be doing some things.
Yeah,
at hit us Film up. Blurreds.
Hit us up. We're here. We love you.
We're the Film Blurreds. I'm Brandon Norwood, and I'm the motherfucking protagonist.
I'm the protagonist.
I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. He Who Remains.
Don't come at us. It's just fucking movies.
You've been listening to the Film Blurreds podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best. It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindfireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.